This is Vandana Shiva, and you're listening to the Enviro Show. Remember, listen to your mother.
Greetings, Earthlings. It's the Sand Wars Enviro Show. I am one of your co-hosts, Dio, and I'm not in the studio with...
I'm Glenn Ayers.
That's right. Okay, Enviro Show listeners, have you heard about the Sand Wars? We'll be focusing on southeastern Massachusetts Pine Barrens here, but it's happening all across the planet because not all sand is alike. Melissa Ferretti, fourth term Herring Pond Wampanoag Tribe chairperson, will be joining us, along with Meg Sheehan, who returns to the show. She's an environmental lawyer and coordinator of the Community Land and Water Coalition. And we're going to dig into this issue. At the same time, we will be celebrating the Massachusetts Governor Maura Healey's issuing an executive order granting state recognition to the Herring Pond Wampanoag Tribe. The Sand Wars are taking place on tribal lands, by the way. We'll get to that soon. So that brings us appropriately to our quote of the week. Okay, our quote of the week. This is not the end of our fight for a cleaner, safer planet. Facts are still facts. Science is still science. The fight is bigger than one election, one political cycle in one country. The fight is bigger still because we are all living through a year defined by the climate crisis in every country of the world. Close quote. And that's John Podesta, who is Biden's climate czar. All right, I guess that takes us to our interview with Melissa and Meg.
Yeah, this is a good interview, and there's a special treat at the end of the interview, so stick around for the whole thing. All right, so today on the Enviro Show, we are joined by two friends of the show, Melissa Ferretti and Meg Sheehan. And Melissa, we're going to go to you first to talk about a pretty amazing story that came out this week about the state recognition of the Herring Pond Wampanoag Tribe. And if you would quickly introduce yourself, you've been on the show before, but introduce yourself to our listeners, and then tell us a little bit about this amazing fact that the state of Massachusetts, the government now, recognizes the Herring Pond Tribe as a government entity within the state of Massachusetts. And tell us how that came about and what it means and why we should all be celebrating this amazing thing. I guess, you know, the Healey administration and, you know, how this came about.
Hi. Yeah. Thanks, Glenn. Thanks so much for having me on. It's a joy to be back. I think it's been a while. So yeah, my name is Melissa Ferretti. Again, I have been on once before, I do believe, at least. And I am a resident of Bourne. Currently, I grew up in Cedarville, which is South Plymouth, is where the homelands of the Herring Pond Wampanoag Tribe are. I am acting on my fourth term for Herring Pond now. That would be a term of 8 years as chair. And I did serve a couple of years as a board member. So yeah, it's been a great week. You know, it's almost bittersweet. We've been obviously doing this work since, you know, since my tenure. One of my missions really has been to get the formal recognition, mainly as in a need to be sure that we are able to, you know, manage our own affairs and to protect our tribal homelands. So we worked hard to gather the evidentiary materials that would maybe be necessary in order for the governor and her staff, her council, to make a recommendation to the governor as to whether Herring Pond was deserving of the recognition or not. So we're really excited that we made it happen. Of course, this is something that I worked on, and as we worked on through the council and just over the years between digital heritage work, whether it be, trips to mass archives, researching records, Plymouth Public Library, Bourne Historic Society, and a lot of our records were housed, of course, in different repositories throughout the United States as well. So it was a lot of tedious, work doing archival work that really led us here in my, 10 years, on the council. And it was a matter of gathering all those records together. And 2 6-inch binders later, full of evidentiary material, shipped up to the governor's office. And somebody that had their ears open and ready to listen, which is really amazing to even have that have been ha had happened. So here we are. We brought the evidence. We, met with the governor's council and her representatives over the months to answer any questions or, ease any doubts they may have. We wanted to be really clear on what our intentions are, that, this is something that's inherent. We know we weren't asking for something we didn't already have. It was just a matter of bringing the records in and them having faith enough to read them and research them and make this really awesome decision. So yeah, we're very, very excited.
Melissa, I think the timing of this is also somewhat auspicious in that here we are the week before Thanksgiving, and the history of the Native peoples supposedly, this is what children are taught in grammar school, that, oh, the natives were welcoming of the pilgrims when they arrived. But there are a lot of people, including myself, which traditionally, I mean, going back 30 years or more, I always thought of Thanksgiving as a day to fast, and there is also a national day of mourning associated with Thanksgiving. But this is the week before now, and the state has done this, I think, intentional timing-wise, to draw attention to the fact that the Native people here in the Commonwealth were, I think, essential, critical, and really, the colonists or the pilgrims or the invaders, whatever you want to call them, would never have survived except for the fact that there were well-developed cultures already here on the Eastern Seaboard. So I think that that's, one thing to keep in mind. And the other thing is that, well, we're approaching the, 250-year anniversary of the revolution that created the federal government here, and Massachusetts was very involved in that. And so we have this very long history of indigenous persistence and culture and survival, really, when it comes down to it. And that I just want to make sure that this recognition takes all of that into consideration in the right context, that this is an amazing feat of persistence by the current inhabitants and also by the ancestors that led us to this point. And can you talk about that?
All right, yeah. So, I mean, again, I don't know if necessarily the timing was intentional, but it certainly was fitting due to the Thanksgiving right upon us. We actually submitted our records, I think, sometime in May. So it took a few months, and we didn't want to push. We wanted them to have the time to review them and to make a sound decision so that it wasn't rushed and anyone can say that, this tribe came in and push this on them. We wanted them to take the time. So we really think the timing was great. And it's extremely meaningful for so many reasons. As you said, Glenn, not only to honor our ancestors that came before us, but in order to survive in this world, in this society that we now live, we really need some of these basic services that our tribe, we must say they deserve, we deserve. And we've struggled a long time. And I say all the time, Herring Pond, we were written in records as very a quiet and industrious tribe known, and that was how it was written. And we really kept to ourselves in many ways. So building this relationship with the state is something that we did very quietly before, that now we're just going to be really asserting that right and doing what's right by our people. So I hope that helps.
Yeah, that's great. It's quite a celebration. I honestly, like I said, I don't celebrate Thanksgiving. I haven't for many, many years. But to me, this is something that is really worth celebrating. And I'll see if Dio has anything to add to that.
Melissa, yes, thanks, Glenn. This is Dio, and I'm inclined to ask if any of the sand mining going on out your way, and this is the Sand Wars Enviro Show, if any of it is on or near Heritage Pond tribal land.
So thanks. That's a great question, Dio. And absolutely. Our Herring Pond lands in Cedarville, at one time we had about 2,600 acres is what our great lot originally was. And of that 2,600 acres, we have 6 acres that remains to the tribe currently. And that was just deeded back to us in 2016. So the property that we were just deeded back literally abuts a project that is in the process currently of being constructed. Crazy enough, the map that overlays this property could fit almost exactly over the map that was created of the lot lines for the Great Lot. Literally, almost exact. So yeah, it absolutely, these things are happening on our traditional homelands, no doubt.
Well, that is a great segue into introducing Meg and bringing back into discussion this atrocity that is occurring, ongoing destruction of the amazing Pine Barrens ecosystem because of the glacial deposits that were left behind thousands of years ago, but which are now extremely valuable to certain people. It's a valuable material for industrial purposes and construction and other things, but it's also all about making money for a select number of people. So Meg, welcome back to the show and bring us up to date on what we've called the sand wars, what you're calling the sand wars in southeastern Mass.
Sure. Thank you so much for having me on, Glenn and Dio, and especially honored to be with Melissa at this amazing historic moment. Yes. So for over 10 years, our coalition, Community Land and Water Coalition, a project of Save the Pine Barrens based in Plymouth, has been raising awareness about sand mining and the impacts on Indigenous culture, our drinking water, and communities. In 2023, we released a report called Sand Wars in Cranberry Country, which is an investigation into the money, politics, and corruption behind sand mining and its silent environmental and cultural crisis in southeastern Massachusetts. And you can find that on our website, www.sandwars.org. And in the last year, since we have issued the report, we have documented that there are now 7 new projects in 2024. There's been a rush to grab as much sand as possible. There's been a frenzy of permit applications. 2 of the 7 have already been granted, massive projects by AD Makepeace Cranberry Company and EJ Pontiff Cranberry Company, both in Carver. And there are 5 more in the process now, and we are demanding that these permits be denied. And as Melissa alluded to and mentioned, 2 of these projects are in Cedarville. One of them is one of the largest projects to date. It's 2 million cubic yards by PA Landers, who has served time in federal prison for sand mining violations in the past and cheating the state out of sand for road construction for the Big Dig. So those are directly on the Great Lot. And we are demanding that these projects be stopped for many reasons. And I think the most compelling reason is the archaeological significance, and that these are some of the last hills where you can see the ocean from the top of the hill. I can't speak for the tribes, but I would think that at least for in today's world. We would value being able to climb to the top of a hill and see the ocean for the view and for what's left of our topography here. So yes, there's lots going on.
Yeah, one of the things that we've covered in the past is this whole scam of claiming that this is cranberry agriculture that they need because they can't, because of the interpretation of the wetlands protection laws, they're not allowed to convert natural wetland areas into new cranberry bogs. So they use this ruse of creating upland cranberry bogs. And of course, the places that they pick to create these bogs are on the highest elevation areas. So what does that mean? That means that they have to remove the hills, remove, you know, 100 or 200 feet of sand in order to get down to level ground, essentially, so that they can create a cranberry bog. And what happens to all of that sand from the top of the hill all the way down? It's similar to the idea of mountaintop removal for coal mining, which was done in the Appalachians. We're doing the same thing here in Massachusetts. We're not blasting the top of these mountains off, but they're digging all of this sand. And of course, they locate these areas where the sand is just right for selling, for industrial uses, commercial and industrial uses. And so is that still something that's being that being perpetrated upon the public? And is the state still looking the other way when it comes to converting so-called hilltops into bogs, you know, and using that excuse?
Yes, absolutely. So they are using that excuse, and it's also a way to evade local zoning and land use laws, because standalone sand and gravel mines are not allowed in residential agricultural districts. But if you claim you're doing some kind of agriculture, then you can try to get around those laws. And that's what we're trying to enforce, is those local land use laws as well as the wetlands laws. And of course, in southeastern Mass, you know, we have the world's largest cranberry grower, AD Makepeace Company, and the state really values the cranberry industry in southeastern Mass. They have a lot of political power, and they are accessing taxpayer funds. There was an article on Channel 5, a story on Channel 5 this week that confirmed what we know, that the cranberry industry is on life support and they're only surviving on all these handouts and on the sand mining. So they get $1 million a year in taxpayer subsidies. They claim they're renovating bogs. And then, of course, they claim they need to build more bogs, which makes no sense when you have an industry that's in decline. So two of the projects that have been granted already this year, it's a total of 120 acres of hills and pristine forested uplands, including some right next to Miles Standish State Forest, that are being mined for a total of about 40 acres of, they claim, future cranberry bogs. And what we're finding is either they really never build the bogs, they'll mine for 15 years, 20 years, and never build the bogs. Or when they do put them in, again, they've taken out 60 acres of sand. So to cover up the whole operation, they'll just put in a few acres of bogs and say, oh, well, see, we built the bogs anyway. So it's really an incredible ruse, and we're continuing to raise awareness about it.
So Meg, Dio here again. This isn't just any sand. I think our listeners would like to know, you know, why is this sand so valuable? So could you speak to that?
Sure. So southeastern Massachusetts is one of the places in the United States that has very lucrative silica sand deposits. So these are sand mines, and that silica sand is a particular quartz-like type of sand. It's not desert sand, which has rounded grains, but this quartz-like sand bonds together and is a critical component for concrete, for fracking sand, for glass. Sand has been used from southeastern Mass to make glass for since the colonists came here and set up glassmaking in Sandwich, Massachusetts. And today, the price of sand globally has skyrocketed. There's a global shortage of the silica sand. So in southeastern Mass, the price has gone up 5 times, and we're just seeing, again, a mad frenzy to get as much sand as fast as possible.
And Melissa, if you could weigh in a little bit about this idea of these lands historically being sacred to the tribe and to the peoples that lived there for thousands of years before the Europeans arrived, and how this kind of wholesale alteration on such a massive scale, you know, like entire removal of entire hills and the topography and all of that, how does that, I don't want to say fit in, how does the native viewpoint of treating the land reconcile with these kinds of industrial scale operations?
I mean, I think when we look right at it, I mean, it's exploitation. I mean, we look at our great lot, and I know we said we had what was about approximately 2,600 acres. Much of that was lost or stolen in many cases, but some of it was obviously gained through petition for partition and turned into bogs. So all of those bogs are now being sold off or restored because they're done with them and they have no use for them, but yet they're building new bogs. So it really makes you wonder when you look at it that way, like Meg had made that point. And I mean, this is our homeland. This is where our encampments were. This is where our people lived. This is where I grew up as a small child, walking in those woods at Hedges Pond with Verna to gather specific herbs or berries or whatever it might be that she needed to add to our food sources. So I look at it and I just think it's a violation all the way around. Isn't it enough that we lost most of the land and now what remains of the Great Lot that is no longer owned by us is also being violated, and it's supposed to be in conservation and protected, yet now it's all of a sudden we need to take all the aggregate off it and, you know, leave it flat. So it's just alarming. It really, really is.
I heard Meg mention Miles Standish State Forest, which I don't think we have time to get into what an incredibly horrible person Miles Standish was. And, you know, racist, genocidal, colonialist. But anyway, I want to suggest, and I'm probably not the first person to say this, but I want to suggest now that the state has appointed an indigenous person to be a liaison to the tribes, especially with the DCR, Department of Conservation and Recreation, which operates the Miles Standish State Forest down there in that southeast region. That woman's name is Leah Hopkins, and I'm not familiar with her, but my understanding is that the commissioner really wanted to have that position, and now they have someone appointed. So I think it's now time for us, the citizens, to gently, at least to begin with, gently request that the Miles Standish State Forest be renamed to the Wampanoag Homeland State Forest. And I think that would be fitting with this, what we've seen, this designation, and also with this idea of, you know, these lands need to be rematriated, or at least we need to be moving in that direction toward the respect of these lands. And eventually what we'll have, if things continue the way they are, is we'll have the Miles Standish, currently called Miles Standish State Forest, soon to be called the Wampanoag Homeland State Forest. That will be completely surrounded by obliterated sand mines. And eventually the state will probably feel that, well, that sand is so valuable that I guess we're going to have to mine out the state forest land as well. So I think that we need to approach the commissioner of DCR, Brian Arrigo, and this new liaison native person, and recommend that this as a symbol of how things are changing and need to change even more, that we should go through a renaming ceremony at the State Forest and really call it what it is. It is the Wampanoag people's homeland. And that, I think, would look a lot better on a map than it currently does, which to me is a symbol of racism and genocide. And that's not something that I want to celebrate or that I think Massachusetts should be associated with. And I'm interested, obviously, in hearing what you both think about this, but that's what I think we really need to be doing in this area, and it would help draw attention to a lot of these issues that are going on right now.
I mean, I agree, right? We know that Miles Standish was not a man to look up to. That's evident, and that's written in history. And that certainly is evident to the Wampanoag people. A renaming would be great, but I must say there's other places in Plymouth that need renaming as well that we could talk about another time. But and it's all in that same vicinity, sadly, right? And any of these racist epitome names are in that area. So there's a pond in right near Hedges Pond that has a very racist name to it. So there may be some thoughts about the names of some more than just Miles Standish in conversations in Plymouth. Just saying. I don't know if Meg wants to add to that.
Oh, I agree. And one of the things that our coalition is committed to is standing in solidarity with the tribes to raise awareness about the sovereign nature of their rights to fish, hunt, fowl, navigate, and so forth, and to point out some of the inconsistencies in what, for example, our state is doing with regard to biodiversity protection and wetland protection and climate resilience, et cetera, while at the same time allowing some of these myths about Miles Standish to be perpetuated and allowing the sand mine to occur under the ruse of agriculture. So this is a really important moment in history, I believe, and this week was a historic moment for the tribe.
Yeah. Meg, before we leave, I want to make sure that you tell folks how they can get in touch with the Community Land and Water Coalition. And the same thing, Melissa, if you want to talk about any ways that folks can follow the Herring Pond tribe, if you have a contact website, anything like that, if either of you do blogs, a mailing list, that kind of stuff, give us that information for our listeners.
Herring Pond, we do have our website. It's www.herringpondtribe.org. And if you wanted to email us, it would be my name, Melissa, at herringpondtribe.org as well. And we also have info@herringpondtribe.org to keep it simple. Thank you so much, Glenn.
Yes. And we have communitylandandwatercoalition.org is our website. We also have a YouTube channel, Save the Pine Barrens. And I do want to take a moment to make a pitch for our new song that we're just releasing this week. It's called No More Sand Mines on the Cranberry Trail. It's by a local group called the Fairy Bog Mothers, and it's about how the sand mining is leveling our hills, taking away our culture and all the money behind it. So check that out.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned that, Meg, because we are going to end this interview by playing that song. I'm going to say it's the world premiere, but I'm not positive about that, but at least it is the premiere right now on this episode of the Enviro Show. And we'll end this by playing that song. But first, I want to thank you both for this, all the incredible work that you do on behalf of not only the humans, not only the tribe, but the environment, all the critters out there, all of creation. You're both, to me, incredible models of community involvement and standing up, you know, to power. And I think that we need to have many more people like you engaged in these kinds of struggles because that's what it takes to change the system or at least move things in a different direction. And I think that what we've been talking about on this show really indicates that this kind of activism and engagement really works. And we need those examples for people to be inspired. So thank you both for being an inspiration for everyone, and especially for the folks in the southeastern part of the state. But you inspire us out here in Western Mass, and we'll continue to follow all of these things as they develop. But thanks again for being on the show and for being such awesome leaders in this effort.
Yes.
Thank you for having us, really.
Yeah. Yes, thank you, Glenn and Dio and the Enviro Show. We really appreciate your support. And yes, it is the world premiere, the first time this is being played on the radio. So please enjoy the song.
All right. Yes. Thank you so much.
All right. Thank you both. Thanks, everyone.
Okay.
Great. Okay. New song to play on the Enviro Show.
Yeah. World premiere of that little tune. We've been following this campaign for a number of years, really, now. And I think that we have to keep up the pressure. There has to be some kind of action taken at the state level, some kind of accountability. And it's really amazing that we have groups like the Community Land and Water Coalition of Southeastern Mass working on this issue, focusing, putting so much energy into it, and making progress. And I just can't believe the amount of energy that Meg has to keep filing lawsuits and keep on this issue relentlessly. And that's what it takes. And eventually, we shall prevail.
All right.
So that's it, folks, for this show. That was a lot. we just have one more thing, and that is to remember.
To listen to your mother and be thankful. Okay, is Dio saying adios.
And I'm Glenn Ayers, and yeah, resist much, obey little.
There it is.
I am Mother Earth, and I approve of this message.